Benjamin Nugent is the author of American Nerd, The Story of My People. The book explores the history of nerdiness and the different subcultures that we tend to think of as being nerdy. According to Nugent, there are two main categories of nerds.
The first type of nerd, disproportionately male, I think. These people are intellectual in ways that strike people as machine-like and socially awkward in ways that strike people as machine-like. They tend to remind people, sometimes pleasantly, of machines. The way they do this is they're passionate about some technically sophisticated activity that doesn't revolve around emotional confrontation or physical confrontation. For example, sex, food, beauty, these are things that revolve around one of those things. However, if what you're into is computers or Dungeons and Dragons or chess, this isn't the case. They speak in language unusually similar to written standard English. They seek to avoid physical and emotional confrontation, and they favor logic and rational communication over nonverbal, non-rational forms of communication. And they tend to enjoy working with machines more than most people do. So that's the first type of nerd. And then the second type of nerd is somebody who, for arbitrary reasons, they wear the wrong outfit on the first day of third grade or what have you, is put into a nerd category by their peers and defined as a nerd because of their lack of social acceptance. But that categorization doesn't reflect anything intrinsic about their mental state.
Do you feel as though you fall into one of these categories, or do you even consider yourself a nerd? Is that just something that people called you?
You know, I was a really nerdy kid, and I think I fell into the first category when I was a kid. I was obsessed with rule-bound activities like Dungeons and Dragons and video games and computer programming. And then when I was a teenager, I changed. And so I think that's one of the reasons I have always, and this book does, resist any neurological explanation for nerdiness. I think it's always a matter of temporary circumstances, or often a matter of temporary circumstances. And when I went out and examined nerds for this book, I spent a lot of time hanging out with nerd subcultures. I was always looking for how the circumstances of people's family lives, other factors, made them nerds or made them non-nerds.
You did a fair amount of research for this. You went looking for nerds, and I suppose the logical place to go is high school. Where'd you look? The debate club? The ham radio enthusiasts?
Yeah, both those places. I spent a lot of time with high school debate kids, and I really loved that part of it, actually. It was really moving for me seeing how they got together. One of them died in a car accident, and the way that this apparently emotionless activity that they all participated in really was fraught with emotion and all brought them together in a very emotional way. I also really liked spending time with people who reenacted medieval battles. If you've never seen about 500 to 1,000 guys on each side dressed in armor charging each other on the floor of the Arizona desert with swords made of rattan, then you haven't lived. You haven't experienced nerdiness in its purest form.
Is that what ties these, I guess you'd call them subcultures, is that what ties them together, the interest in trying to find an intellectual, a rational, a logical means to look at life?
I think for a lot of them, yes. Especially for kids who are in high school, the world they're in seems like such an arbitrarily created hierarchy with no reasonable order. And they can create alternate worlds for themselves that do have a reasonable order and where anyone can join as long as they have the intellectual prowess and the know-how. It's a fairer, more meritocratic world, usually, that they create. And when I was a teenager, I certainly looked for that in subcultures like the kids who played Dungeons and Dragons at my school, if you can call that a subculture. And when I went back and followed around my nerdy friends from high school, I absolutely found that that was the function that those activities fulfilled in their lives. It was a way of creating a more rational, fair, alternate universe.
So when you went back and looked at these same cultures from an adult perspective, what surprised you the most?
I think what surprised me the most was the fact that for so many of the kids I knew in high school, the activity at hand was a way of escaping from an extremely confusing home life in which they had no control. Because I think on some level, I'd always bought the stereotype of nerds that they tend to come from. Well, I don't know if this is something that's made explicit in movies and TV, but we tend to show nerds as coming from middle-class homes and being sheltered kids who aren't tough. And I was really surprised to learn how secretly tough my friends in high school were, that they came from really difficult home lives. You could argue they were abusive or semi-abusive home lives, and that this was their way of maintaining control and having that sense of being able to be competent over something in their lives, that they could go off into this rational world. And I think I'm struck by what a mature, productive way of dealing with the hand they were dealt that was. And I didn't realize that that was what was happening at all when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I think I felt guilty about it, and I left it as soon as I could.
Did you, in talking to the kids who are now nerds, if you will, find that they had any better understanding of it than you did at that time?
That's an interesting question. I don't know if they had a better understanding that that's the function it filled in their lives. I don't think they did. I think it's only in retrospect that we were able to talk about it and figure out that that was what was going on. I mean, a couple of them said explicitly, you know, when I went over to your house and your mom was around, things were more rational. And that was a huge relief for me, that we were doing some rational activity and the adults were reasonable and it was safe. And that was a stark contrast with their own home lives. And so they were aware of that at the time. But I don't think at the time they were aware that the nerdy activities we were pursuing, like D&D and computer games, had a function almost similar to religion or worship for other people, a way of going off and entering a sanctum.
You also write about what you call nerd ethnicity. Can you explain what that is?
Sure. If you look at our stereotypes of nerds, you'll find that they share common ancestors with ethnic stereotypes. There was a word that was very popular in the progressive era, late 19th century, early 20th century, called greasy grind. And the greasy grind was a person who got into a good college usually by working extremely hard and quote-unquote grade grubbing in high school. And greasy grinds freaked people out because you could be an immigrant, you could be Jewish, or this was later, at the time no one really thought of the Chinese this way, but they were starting to. You could be Jewish and get your way into a WASP enclave. Most of the elite colleges in this country at that time were largely still WASP enclaves. And it was considered a threat to the Protestant establishment, or even worse, they explicitly said at that time, the Nordic race, quote-unquote. You know, the sort of Great Gatsby stuff about Nordics was really something people talked about. Teddy Roosevelt referred to phys ed being mandatory as a racial defense weapon for Nordics, that we had to, you know, that we had to create these strong Nordic men. So these Jewish immigrants who studied really hard and who could get into the Ivy League were discriminated against in admissions policies and socially discriminated against, certainly. And I think the greasy grind and the way that person was portrayed has a lot in common with the way nerds were portrayed late in the 20th century. Of course, the nerd is the greasy grind drained of ethnic associations. I don't think when people say nerd now, they think Jew, but it's the descendant of an ethnic stereotype.
And this sort of leads into the theory of contemporary Western racism and its relationship to the jock and the nerd, isn't it?
That's right. I draw a chart that I call the racism chart. And the case I'm making is that if you look at the way African Americans are stereotyped and the way Asian Americans are stereotyped and the way we've tended to think of the animal and the machine and sensuality, then what happens is, in a lot of racist art and literature and propaganda, white people see themselves as the middle ground between one side, which has Asians and machines on it, these unsensual industrial things that are really good at thinking and are very industrious but aren't sensual at all. And then on the other side are African Americans and animals, and they are characterized as primitive, too close to the land, and the Native American is also on this side, and the white man gets to be right in the middle. And I think that that's one way of talking about how the ethnic stereotypes on the primitive side sort of turned into our stereotype of the jock and our notion of the jock and those stereotypes on the machine side turned into our idea of a nerd. It's hard to describe this chart verbally, but I put the nerd somewhere close to the Asian American machine side on the racism chart and the jock on the other side.
It's funny, isn't it, though, because as I understand your definition of nerds, they tend to be mostly white guys.
We don't really know that, but one study by a, I think, social linguist is the term, from UC Santa Barbara, Mary Buchholz, in one school in California, and this is just one Californian school, found that most of the kids who considered themselves nerds were white, and that unlike the really popular white kids, who she called the hegemonic white kids, they did not appropriate any African-American slang. That if you were one of the popular kids at this high school, one of the ways you acted out popularity, you showed yourself to be a popular kid, was to occasionally use African-American slang and incorporate it into your speech, whereas the nerdy kids never did that. She talked about the implications of this and what African-American slang seemed to symbolize for these kids. And using Greco-Latinate words instead of Germanic words was another badge of nerdiness. And the refusal to incorporate African-American slang was part of the linguistic arsenal, if you will, by which nerds showed who they were to each other. You could recognize another nerd by the fact that they cleaved to something like written standard English.
Benjamin Nugent is the author of American Nerd, The Story of My People.